Welcome to another Modern Commerce Talk. Today, I'm your host, Hannah Engström from Aventia, and my guest is Jack Stratton from Insider Trends. And if you've listened to this podcast before, you might recognize him as the host. But for this episode, he will switch seats. And Jack Stratton is a well-renowned retail expert, and he's based in London. And among other things, he is executing retail safaris all over the world. And he's just gotten back from New York City and has a lot of exciting things to share. And New York City is the cradle of retail trends, basically, where it all starts, influencing what we do here in Europe. Hi, Jack. It's so nice to see you again.
Hi, Hannah. Thank you. Yeah, it's weird to switch seats, but good.
Yeah. Thank you for joining this a little bit unusual episode.
No, it's fun. No, I'm excited. Yeah, thank you, Hannah.
So you've just gotten back from New York City, and it must have been so nice to revisit after these pandemic years. What was it like? How long has it been since you last went?
Yeah, so I went, you know, I did a tour around NRF in January, but that was weird because a lot of, you know, we had the Omicron wave and a lot of our retail clients kind of pulled out of traveling. So I did a tour and did a lot of store scouting, but there was still a sense, I think, of nerves, and also a lot of retailers still seemed unsure as to exactly what they were doing with their flagships and concept spaces in New York. But then I've been two or three times recently for retail tours, like kind of in the summer months, and it's completely different. Like everything is back open, there's a load of new stuff open, and there's a real sense again that, you know, big brands, new brands are really kind of testing their newest and most interesting ideas out in New York. So it feels now like it was pre-pandemic. So the last time I'd been before that was I went in January 2020, when COVID was kind of first happening, but it hadn't really yet affected anything in New York. And it feels just like pre-pandemic again, to be honest. New York again is just that place where, you know, big brands and small brands are, you know, testing out cool stuff. So it was great.
Yeah, it's really where it all starts, right? And what we are looking for, like when we are looking for inspiration, we look at New York, mainly in the Western world, right?
Yeah.
So jumping into that, to the main topic for this talk, what is new in New York City? What trends did you identify during your last trip?
Yeah, that's it's a good way of looking at it, I think, because there's loads of kind of specific stuff that people are talking about. But in terms of trends, there are probably just a few key things. I think broadly, one big thing I'm seeing a lot, and this is in New York and London, to be fair, it's happening a lot in London as well. And I think, you know, those two cities definitely are, as you really nicely put it, the kind of cradle of new ideas. Even more so in New York, I definitely saw that I had this sense that there's an attempt in flagships and concept spaces, and even in some regular stores, to test stuff faster. It's like there's a bit of an A-B test thing going on in the physical world. So this has been going, it's nothing new. So flagship spaces, you know, Adidas and Nike and all kinds of brands have been using their spaces in places like New York and London to test ideas that they might be able to use worldwide, or to find out more about their customers, to collect data, to learn more about the product, whatever. But I just felt that stuff was changing faster in New York. So the interesting thing is I went out for two different projects within about 2 or 3 weeks of each other. And that was interesting because quite a few of the big stores among some of the bigger brands that I visited had changed in that period. So this and changed a lot, like kind of the main experience that you'd have in a store, like, so the kind of like the flagship experience as you walk in on the main floor in like Adidas or Nike Town was changing in the space of like 2-3 weeks. But even there was so much pop-up that had changed pretty quickly as well. So I think very broadly I noticed a sense of, you know, there's always testing going on in New York, but it's just a very rapid thing at the moment. And I wonder whether there's an increasing sense among big and small retailers that, you know, that's really got to be one of the main goals for some of these bigger spaces, is using that renewed footfall. And by the way, footfall is getting much better in all these locations. So New York was busy. That's the other thing. There are a lot of shoppers around. So all of a sudden, testing means something again, because actually you've got a lot of people. So whatever you might find out about these experiences for a few weeks in the Adidas flagship or whatever, well, it starts to become more meaningful because people are actually there.
They really have returned, right?
Yes.
But back to the shopping scene.
And I think that was that's part of that connected with me recently. I'm like, I get why stuff's changing faster, because it actually makes sense. I mean, around NRF, I was looking around thinking, well, there just aren't that many shoppers around. So what's the point in changing everything quickly? Because much like if you're testing something online, if you haven't got the volume of traffic, what's the point? What are you really going to learn? So broadly, definitely, that was one big thing. There's also still, this is an ongoing thing, this was happening pre-pandemic, but there's definitely, I mean, I saw this kind of manifested in lots of different ways, but I think a new way of looking at department stores, or looking at kind of multi-brand, multi-product spaces. Again, I noticed more of a sense of stock and products changing more quickly. So there's companies like Schofields, who have been around for a while, but they're still doing what they're doing. Also Neighborhood Goods in New York. So they're two good examples of department stores that basically their main attraction is the fact their products change all the time. So they're constantly hosting new brands, often digital first brands, e-com brands coming on offline for the first time. And I saw some more established retailers starting to try to offer that same sense of change. Again, I think it's a real influence of the pandemic and e-com. There's a sense of, like, you know, I think discovery was a big thing during the pandemic. A lot of us online, it was much easier to discover new brands within, you know, different sectors. So, you know, we all of us are constantly discovering new brands because it's so easy to do that online. That feels like a direct response to that. Department stores can't just stock the same range of products and rely on that forevermore. There needs to be a better mix of actually, you know, what makes me go in the store. And, you know, I love the idea of maybe like Neighborhood Goods is a really trusted curator of really cool stuff. So I could imagine myself in New York, I'd go back every month because I know, well, they're going to have new stuff and I'm not going to have heard of those products or brands, but I trust Neighborhood Goods to curate a really great selection. So I'm kind of, you know, excited to go there. So I think there was definitely some interesting stuff in terms of discovery and all kinds of things. And probably the one other big one, which I'm only really seeing the very beginning of this, but just is really important to mention, is the fact that Shopify have a store in downtown. And it's actually one of the most interesting stores in the whole of New York that I've seen in terms of new spaces that I've scouted. It's really, really interesting. There's always new stuff going on. The purpose, like the objective of the store and what their kind of definition of success is, quite hard to know for sure because they're not totally clear on it. But primarily what they're doing is they're hosting Shopify partners. So, you know, brands small and larger who use Shopify. They're allowing them to take over parts of the space. The space is amazing. So it's got this amazing events area, a co-working part. And they're getting, you know, and they're allowing these brands to come in. And also they kind of bring lots of really small partners in and help them to grow. So they have a little photography studio set up so they can like photograph products to sell online. They have lots of advisors in store to explain how Shopify works. They even sell kind of Shopify affiliated products, so like POS stuff and whatever. But it's really interesting to see a business like Shopify in a proper iconic, you know, downtown location, you know, next to Nike and Adidas and Chanel and, you know, all these kind of brands you expect to be downtown. There is a kind of a digital online business trying to reach out to regular high street shoppers. It's so interesting to see. And it makes you think, because, you know, there were a lot of stores that were closed as well, Hannah. It made me think, actually, I could see more companies like Shopify taking those spaces.
It's really interesting.
So I don't, you know, and so that would be the other one. And there are other little examples that link to that idea of B2B kind of companies coming on the high street. There were, you know, Google's new flagship was quite heavily directed towards businesses. So not just selling, you know, Google products, but selling to businesses within a kind of cool high street space, which, you know, was quite interesting. So, you know, loads of stuff like that. It was, you know, it was great. And I mean, there's loads of other kind of trends that will be more familiar to people for sure. So there's a big focus in spaces on, you know, community building. So playing to fans. I think there was loads of Gen Z stuff. There's a couple of amazing pop-ups that were heavily Gen. I think there was a big waiting in downtown New York, particularly in kind of the Soho area towards Gen Z. which makes sense, I think, because there's so many Gen Z luxury brands have done really well, you know, kind of during the pandemic and online, made loads of money. And I understand why they're taking, you know, short lease spaces, because it's like marketing for them, it's brand building. And that's the right place to be, you know.
Yeah.
And those spaces are almost like, you see people going in and they're not really selling anything. They're more like content creators. It's just loads of people going in, taking photos and sharing them online. And the spaces are almost like these kind of immersive adverts, like, and the staff are great, but there's no attempt whatsoever to sell. They're just like kind of places for people who already know the brand to come and say, oh, wow, I've been buying from you guys, I'm going to take a photo and, you know, blah, blah, blah. And maybe a little bit of customer acquisition, like, you know, a cool, bright space that makes people think, oh, I'm going to follow these guys on Instagram. But there's not really selling going on.
It's really interesting how the stores, they're actually becoming marketing channels.
Yes, definitely.
And it's interesting to see that is an increasing trend. And of course, it starts in New York. So maybe we'll see it soon here in the Nordics, in Europe as well. I know that some stores are doing that in London as well, right, at the moment.
Yeah, and I wonder whether in the rest of Europe we'll see, there are still examples in the rest of Europe, but what we might see more in the Nordics and elsewhere is that maybe there's just, you know, with some of those larger stores, with the ongoing problem, the historic kind of legacy problem for a lot of more traditional retailers of what to do with large spaces. I wonder if what we might see is an influence of kind of maybe using some of those spaces in slightly more complex ways. So not just having them full of product, but maybe devoting some of the space to more of a marketing role, more of an advertising role. So maybe you turn parts of the space into something more experiential or event led or something to bring, you know, your more devoted, bigger spending customers in to do a little bit of kind of peer to peer type stuff. I think at the very least, we'll start to see more of that. I'm not saying we'll necessarily see, you know, everywhere in the Nordics, spaces that are purely marketing spaces, you know, where the KPI for the store is like advertising stuff. But I'm sure that we'll see, you know, some of those larger stores, it just makes sense to look at them in a bit more of an omni-channel way and go, well, actually, just like online is not just about selling, but also bringing in new customers and advertising, marketing, everything, maybe the physical space should be the same. It's not just about selling. It can be other brand building objectives.
Do you think that is a response to the pandemic? Because obviously lots of things has changed during the last couple of years. I mean, shoppers have not been able to visit the high streets and the department stores, of course. Do you think retailers are leaning towards like more of an omnichannel approach due to the pandemic? Do you think that is a response?
Definitely. So the most notable thing is that, you know, there's almost two things I saw a lot in New York and I'm seeing in London, is that big retailers seem to be looking, when they have lots of stores, I mean, big retailers with lots of stores and a big online footprint, those kinds of companies like Nike, they seem to be looking at their brands as a big ecosystem with lots of different channels. And then the store is just one channel, right? And that mentality, that mindset gives them more freedom to play around with what you can do in that space. So yeah, you might buy, but it also could be service or experience or advertising or marketing, or it could be focused on loyalty purely for your existing customers, or pure acquisition. It could just be like the space is somewhere where we bring in new customers, make them aware that we exist. Those kinds of retailers are doing that. But even more interestingly, the kind of digital first brands, the e-com brands, so the smaller, often Gen Z sort of companies who did well during the pandemic, grew, built, and it built a kind of audience online, sold lots online. I keep on seeing them open up stores. So in New York, there was this there's this brand Bala, who do like very high end kind of fitness equipment. They've opened this pop up. It's only there for four months, and anyone hearing this should look it up and just look at pictures of it. It's amazing. It's so beautiful. They sell like fitness equipment for incredibly expensive. It's the most kind of Instagrammy space you could ever imagine. It's beautiful, very cool. But I was looking at them, like, they really don't need a space. You know, they're selling online, their audience is online, it all works, but they've decided to open a space. And I'm noticing a lot of digital first brands are doing that, but it's very clear to your earlier point, it's pure marketing, brand building, PR. That's kind of what it is. So I think those kinds of brands, as well as traditional retailers, and, you know, I mentioned Nike, but, it, this is happening among all kinds of large retailers. I think the most successful companies of the future will be the ones that look at it in that more kind of, or get into that mindset of thinking about it as just being one channel. And that will give them the freedom to play around with it a bit more, as opposed to the store still being this really central thing where we're measuring sales per square foot and we have to have X amount of product in there. And this is where we do sales and service and everything. I think we'll see a more open-minded approach to how spaces are used within that omnichannel network. And that's definitely, back to your original point, a pandemic response, because, you know, wherever you are in the world, online penetration went up in terms of sales, but in terms of just people finding out about you online, I mean, that increased by far more than sales did, right?
And I
think that's the point, is that, you know, you can't have what happened during the pandemic and it not influence space. And I think any brands that just ignore that and expect to return to normal will fail, despite the fact, by the way, that footfall's, you know, back to a large extent all around the world, which maybe is kind of slightly tricking some retailers into thinking, okay, we return to our pre-pandemic models. And I think that's foolish, because just because people might be buying a bit more online and visiting more, sorry, offline and buying more offline again, I don't think, you know, we can't reverse what's happened, which is that switch in behavior to going online all the time to look up stuff. And it's not just about buying, is it?
It's a new reality, basically, and everyone needs to adapt. Summing up our talk, Jack, I'm curious, which trends from New York City do you think European retailers could benefit from implementing? Things that haven't really reached us across the pond.
Yeah, I think probably this kind of... this approach of, and it's very combined with the two things I've talked about the most, but more of a mindset, I think we'll see, especially among the bigger retailers, of using the space to test in a more meaningful way. So having more of a mindset of changing things more regularly, whether that's, you know, the design of the store, how the store is used, products, whatever, but understanding that sense of changing the store more regularly. So giving customers a reason to keep coming back, but using it as a space to really, you know, replicate that kind of online A/B testing approach, actually seeing the space as a real opportunity to capture some meaningful information, which I think goes hand in hand with this, what we'll see in Europe more and more, is just a new mindset of stores as part of an omnichannel ecosystem and not just the center and equally not some isolated part of what you're doing. Actually, it's just a channel and therefore it can do anything. It can be whatever you want, somewhere to buy or somewhere to not buy. I think we'll see that more and more. I think it's already happening to some degree, but I think we'll start to see it at a bigger scale. Because ultimately, you know, brands rightly are still asking the question of what space should be. And I know footfall's coming back, but there's barely a country in the world at the moment that isn't still, you know, looking at some empty retail units and wondering, you know, what do we put in there? What do we do with our existing spaces? So it is still about mindset, you know, and I think we'll start to see that more in Europe because that's what we're seeing in New York and London is a progression of what a store can be and what it can do.
Yeah, that's really interesting, Jack. Thank you so much for doing this talk, a little bit unusual talk.
Pleasure. Yeah, thank you for interviewing me.
This is actually all we got time for today. And we'll be back soon with another Modern Commerce talk. And you'll find many more of these on the Avencia website and on your podcast platforms, such as Spotify and Apple. And really nice to catch up again, Jack. I think we will have many more of these talks, catching up about trends. Thank you so much for taking the time, and speak soon.
Speak soon. Thanks, Hannah. Bye.
Take care. Bye.